Good morning, counsel. The case of In Re Interest of Prince R. And I think we've got everybody on, so we're going to start by introducing the members of the court, and then counsel will be identified and introduced. And then if you have any questions before we start, we'll answer those. I'm Mike Hevigan, the Chief Justice, and by order of seniority on the court, time on the court, the other members of the court will introduce themselves.
Good morning. I'm Justice Lindsay Miller Lerman.
William Castle. Good morning.
Stephanie Stacy. Good morning.
Jeff Funk. Good morning.
Jonathan Papik.
And John Friedenberg.
Very good. Thank you, members of the court. Now, I believe we have two lawyers as appellants or aligned as appellants. Mr. Chapin, are you with us this morning?
Your Honor, I am. And good morning to the Chief Justice and to the other justices of the Supreme Court of the state of Nebraska.
And to you. And Ms. Burton, are you with us this morning?
Yes, I am, Your Honor. Good morning.
As I understand it, you each are going to get 5 minutes of time. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Very good. And our timer will keep track of that 5 minutes for you. And you may each reserve time for rebuttal if you care to. And Ms. Lansky, are you with us today?
Yes, I am. Good morning.
And good morning to you, Ms. Lansky. I believe that is everybody participating. Do any counsel have any questions before we begin?
Your Honor, this is Bill Chapin. I don't have any questions. I would like to reserve at least 1 minute for rebuttal.
Very good. We will do that for you. Any other questions?
No, Your Honor. No.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chapin. Then I am going to assume that you are going first. So good morning to you, and you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning again to the Chief Justice and the Justices of the Court of Supreme Court of the State of Nebraska. This case involves a child that was receiving therapy for cancer on his right arm. And basically, the communication problems that existed then between the parents and the medical staff at Children's Hospital. And I talk about the communication problems just simply because I think to get right to the quick of it, there was problems back and forth as to how the treatment should progress, whether the treatment was too hard on the child or not, you know, or were there other ways to mitigate some of the difficulties the child was having. But I think the crux of the matter comes to a conversation that took place on October 1st of 2019 between my client and the doctors at Children's, where he kept asking about getting a second opinion, kept asking about, had some problems with radiation. And I emphasize this point because at the end of it, two things happened that I think are crucial to this case. The first thing was that at the end of that conversation on October 1st of 2019, my client, even though he had a lot of reservations, in the best interest of his child, agreed to sign the radiation, the papers authorizing radiation, so that his child could continue to get treatment. The other thing that happened after that meeting was that the doctor called CPS. And CPS was concerned about the parents and the communication. What then subsequently happened factually is the mother then took the child out of state, eventually was found in Tennessee. The child was brought back. Petition was filed on a basically a risk of harm or a harm charge. And the case proceeded to trial. At trial, what the testimony was of the doctors is that the child did not suffer any harm, even though he hadn't been, had received any treatments between October 1st and October 26th of 2019. And I think that it, if I remember the record correctly, there would be times when the treatment would get rough, and so they'd either cut it back or delay it or, you know, change it periodically. So it wasn't like there was a strict regimen that had to be followed rigorously.
Did the doctors testify that there is a risk of harm from an extended period of time of no treatment?
I believe they did, but the doctors also testified that in this particular case, there was no harm to the child. I don't know. I don't recall the doctors, Your Honor. I don't recall the doctors specifying as to how long that would take.
Does there have
to, harm would take place?
Does there have to be actual harm for a child to be adjudicated in a medical neglect case?
Well, I think in, if I read Jeremy, In re Jeremy Uke at 304 Nebraska 734 correctly, I don't think there's an actual, has to be a showing, but it seems to me that one should look at, first of all, the best interest of the child. And if there is no harm, then the question really becomes, why is the child being removed from the parents? Because that's the other key issue here. If you're not going to hurt the child, then why take the child from the parents? There are other avenues you can take before you take that drastic step. And I think that's one of the things that should have happened here. I think the other thing that should have happened here, since my client was specifically asking for a second opinion, it seems that the doctors of children should have aided that. And that, I think the record is clear. There wasn't much aid. Unfortunately, I have 53 seconds left, so I'm going to turn this over to Ms. Burton. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Burton. Kim, good morning to you, and you may proceed.
Good morning. I'd also like to reserve 1 minute, if I may, for rebuttal time. Good morning, Chief Justice. Good morning, members of the Supreme Court. Good morning, counsel. Again, my name is Mona Burton. I represent Abak Rehan, who is the natural mother, the biological mother of Prince, the child at issue in this case. Abak R. was noted by social work and the social work notes as a loving mother. And I'd like to take you back with the timeline of this case because I do think it's important. This started in May of 2019 when Ms. Rehan noticed a bump in her son's right forearm. She became concerned. Notably so, she takes the child, Prince, to the emergency room, gets no answers. And then either she or Mr. Muhammad take Prince to his primary care physician here in Lincoln. Again, no answers, but that primary care physician then refers the family to Omaha Children's Hospital. They follow through with that. A biopsy is conducted, and we're now in July of 2019. A biopsy is conducted, and ultimately, I'm not even going to try to pronounce the name of the cancer, but Prince has cancer right forearm. There's concern that possibly it spread to his lymph nodes. At that point, I'll just say chaos ensues. They've learned their son has cancer. They have a mixed array of emotions. They're angry. They're scared. They're meeting with doctors. They're meeting with nurses. They're meeting with educators. They're provided with a mass amount of information. Regardless, they're provided with the standard of care treatment. They agree to that treatment. And for a month and a half, Prince is going to those chemotherapy appointments. And ultimately, in the mid-September, that's when we start seeing the medical professionals maybe start having some issues. At that point, Prince is seeing some of the negative effects of chemotherapy. He's throwing up. He's nauseated. He's not eating. Prince also has some behaviors. He's not verbal. And Dr. Acquisino noted that some of these behaviors are not normal for a four-year-old. And the parents are having some difficulty. They're seeing their child really sick. And at that point, there are a few appointments that are missed in mid-September. But again, the social work notes indicate on September 24th that there are no concerns associated with the parents at that point. And then, as Mr. Chapin noted, we have that meeting on October 1st where radiation is discussed because that's the next step in the 66-week course of treatment. And the parents voice concerns not only for the effects of chemotherapy, which I, if I backtrack, Dr. Acquazzano also noted that she could have modified that chemotherapy treatment in mid-September to address some of those concerns that the parents were seeing, but she didn't offer it and didn't consider it at that time. Again, in the October 1st meeting, they're talking about radiation. The parents voiced some concerns with the radiation, with the chemotherapy, with the use of Prince's right arm, lack of functionality. At that point, Dr. Acquazzano first noted that she didn't understand the parents' concerns with the arm and that potentially it could have been malpractice. That was at the first point that she clearly understood what the parents were concerned about.
Ms. Burton, I'm concerned your time is going to expire before we get to really what I think is the crux of the case. And that's, how do we explain what happened after October 2nd when the evidence indicates your client and the child disappeared from Nebraska until they were found in Tennessee several weeks later?
My client, as indicated, both parents wanted to get a second opinion. They were not provided.
Is there any indication that a second opinion was sought?
There's not information in the record that a second opinion occurred, Your Honor. But there is evidence in the record that both parents wanted a second opinion. There's evidence that the medical professionals did not provide the parents with a list of providers. And again, Children's Hospital is part of a consortium of providers that provide the same level or care of treatment.
What do we make of the statement your client made in the recording? If we get treatment, it won't be in Nebraska.
Well, there was also evidence from Investigator Herrera, Your Honor, that my client indicated that she wanted, was not refusing treatment and wanted her client wanted her son to get treatment. That is noted in my brief and as indicated in the Bill of Exceptions. There's no indication that the parents were refusing treatment. And what most important, when Prince returned to Nebraska, there was, under Mr. Ball's questioning, Dr. Acquazzano noted that there was the prognosis hadn't changed, the tumor hadn't changed, and they were able to immediately start the treatment again. And now I am out of time. Your Honors, I'd ask that this court find that there was no risk, that the state failed to prove that there was a risk of harm to Prince, and that this court reverse the trial court's decision to adjudicate with orders to dismiss.
Thank you very much. Ms. Lamsky, good morning to you.
Good morning. Good morning, Chief Justice and Justices. My name is Maureen Lamsky, and I'm here on behalf of the state of Nebraska. This is a clear case of parents neglecting the medical needs of their child. No one is disputing that they love their child, but for reasons that aren't fully known, they did not ever really accept what the doctors were telling them about the risks to their child. Dr. Acquazzano was the only medical expert that testified, and she was clearly a qualified expert in a very specialized field. And she informed the children or the parents that if Prince did not receive treatment, he would die. This was a cancer that if it wasn't treated right the first time, it becomes fatal, and there's no going back from that. It was clearly important that they followed the recommendations of the doctor. Unfortunately, at some point in September, when the expected side effects began, the parents became more resistive. On September 11th, Muhammad Kumar, the father, called Ms. Chesters and said that there was too much medicine and Prince wasn't feeling well, and so he wouldn't be coming in for chemo. And that kind of thought process continued on. And later in September, Prince also missed additional appointments for his chemotherapy. He also missed appointments for the occupational therapy, which maybe could have helped the parents' issue with Prince's wrist movement, because that was a concern. Dr. Acquazzano and her team were never against there being a second opinion, and there was not a second opinion done. As Dr. Acquisino testified, whenever that's done, the other hospital always contacts her. She was never contacted, and the father never picked up the records. So there could not have been a qualified second opinion conducted during this time frame without the medical records. Both parents' statements to Investigator Herrera are very concerning. Mohammed Kamark he stated that it wasn't the cancer that was going to kill his son, it was the medicine. He made a statement to the HHS worker that his son would live forever. The parents testified that the parents had trouble getting Prince to take the medicines that would help with the side effects, but there was testimony that the foster parents were able to help him get those done. He continued to improve upon his return. There's clearly a risk of harm to Prince. If the state hadn't stepped in, he would not have been receiving his life-saving treatment. Dr. Acquisino also testified about the risk of harm because Prince was immunocompromised. And so he went over 3 weeks without seeing a doctor, which is very concerning. He also had a central line, which put him at great risk for an infection. The case law is clear that there doesn't have to be a harm. It just has to be a clear risk of harm. And there was clearly a risk of harm proven in this case. It's very unfortunate, and I know the parents were in a tough position, but they did not act the way parents are expected to act as far as working with medical providers to ensure their son got the most basically critical medical intervention, and that just didn't happen with the parents. Mr. Kamar frequently made statements that he had done his own research. He's not a medical doctor. There was a clear unwillingness on both parents to not cooperate and make sure that Prince got the treatment he needed to save his life. And so for all those reasons and all the reasons set forth in the opinion, that noted credibility issues with Mr. Kamar as well, that the opinion of the separate juvenile court be affirmed. And with that, there are no other questions, I guess that's the crux of my argument. So.
Is there room? I guess I have one question. Is there room ever for parents to decide to not follow medical advice? Is a parent obligated at all times to follow the direction of a medical professional?
I'm sure there are some situations that would be the exception. It's just clear this isn't one of those exceptions. There was no rational reason not to follow the medical advice of a specialized cancer doctor when the recommendations are to prevent the ultimate harm, death. I mean, that's not the same as not following a doctor's advice about an ingrown toenail. This is something that could be fatal. And yes, it's neglectful to not follow medical advice when there's no other conflicting advice on something so crucial as the life of your child.
Could the parents have made a decision that this cancer is so serious, Prince's chances of survival are low, and putting him through this chemo is awful, and we'd prefer palliative care? Is that an option that's available in a case like this, or is it?
Not when his chance of survival is more than 50%. I mean, what parent would say, hey, if you do this, you have more than a 50% chance of survival? I mean, I think that gives the state the right to step in. I think if you only had maybe like a 5 or 10 chance of survival, that's something that the doctors would have worked with and discussed. But I mean, when you have a greater than 50% chance of not dying, why would you risk having your child die? I think that isn't the case where this is one where a parent could rationally choose palliative care.
What is the evidence as to what, if anything, the doctors communicated to the parents about the urgency of continued treatment. I mean, I think I understand Ms. Burton's argument to be, well, they were going to seek a second opinion, they just didn't get to it before the state intervened. Do we have evidence that the medical staff at Children's communicated to the parents that this was urgent? It isn't an option to take a break for a month and then get a second opinion. What do we have in the record on that front?
I think that was what was said at the October 1st meeting. And I mean, I think to some extent it was in the literature and all the training that was done before. Dr. Acquisino at that time, I think they referred to it as the Come to Jesus meeting. That was why it was so critical that they agreed to do the next step, which was the chemo. They knew the chemo was the next step, that it was to start.
The radiation.
I'm sorry, the radiation. I apologize. Yeah, but the radiation was to start the next day. And that was critical. They said that this was the plan. They did tell them multiple times, if your child doesn't receive this treatment, he will die. I think Dr. Acquisino said that, 1 to 2 weeks was, not the preference, but it could, to wait that long for a second opinion. I think she did convey in that meeting in her testimony that there was some urgency in getting the opinion as soon as possible. But I think the evidence is clear that there was no plan to get any medical care. Which is unfortunate, because I mean, not only is there the cancer risk, but then there's also the immunocompromised, and then also the line that he had, the port. I mean, it was pretty clear from the beginning that they were trying to explain to the parents that if you miss out in any of the chemo appointments, you're giving Prince all of the potential for the side effects, but you're not giving him the benefit of the treatment. I think throughout the case, there was the training that this is what needs to happen and this is when it needs to happen. And the parents, for whatever reason, were just not really willing to hear that and follow through with that. And with the father, oftentimes just thinking he knew more than the doctors.
Counsel?
Yes.
At hearing, did either parent offer alternative options going forward other than removal? If they did, what were they?
That was not discussed at the time. I think other options would have been available had the mother not left the state when CPS first came out to talk with the family. I think, though, once you start, leaving the state with a child, that wasn't discussed. And then also the temporary custody order was not appealed. Just the adjudication order was appealed. And if there are no other questions, it looks like I'm almost out of time.
Thank you very much, Ms. Lamsky. Both counsel have requested rebuttal time, and Mr. Chapin, do we have rebuttal time for you?
Thank you, Your Honor. I believe I have about 47 seconds, so I'll be real quick. I think what the record... Pardon?
We'll give you an entire minute.
Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor. As I was going to say, I think what the record does reflect, regardless of how you characterize it, what the record does reflect is these parents actually did, regardless of all their moaning and groaning, regardless of all their objections to what the doctors were saying, and regardless of the number of times they asked for a second opinion, they always went along and provided and signed the documents so that their child could receive treatment. The point is that they did seek a point, and what you have to understand is what happened to this child's arm is that he used to have the capability of using his wrist, and went after the surgery, it was just bent over like this and he couldn't use it. That's why one of the reasons why they wanted the second opinion, which they still haven't received as of today's date. The fact that they were on the point or trying to get that should not be a reason for CPS to step in, take this child, and should not be reasons to show that the state has met its burden. And with that, I'd ask the court to overrule the lower court's decision.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for Ms. Burton? Oh, yeah. Ms. Burton, we're going to give you a minute also. Are you there, Ms. Burton? I think you need to unmute.
There I am. Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate the extra time. Speaking to the crux of the issue is, you know, my client did leave the state to seek a second opinion for her son. And I don't think we've talked about that Children's Hospital is the only facility in the state of Nebraska that offers the specialized oncology services for children. So in order to get a second opinion, one does have to leave the state of Nebraska. And I don't recall exactly Dr. Aquazino's testimony as far as what was conveyed during the October 1st meeting.
Ms. Burton, what evidence is there in the record that any concrete steps whatsoever were taken to obtain a second opinion?
The evidence is that my client wanted to get a second opinion, Your Honor. Other than that, there's no evidence beyond that. But the evidence is that both parents love their son. They noticed an issue with his arm. They sought treatment. They did participate in the treatment, but the evidence is there was a lack of communication between the providers and the parents, and therefore a second opinion outside the state was sought. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That concludes arguments then in In Re Interest of Prince. The court will go on to the next case of the day, which is Rogers versus Jack's Supper Club. So
Chief Justice,
you are accused, or excuse me, you are excused, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.